All right, my screen says 45, I'm gonna start. So I'm not gonna talk much about Nextcloud this time. I did that yesterday already in two talks. But I do wanna say the thing I said yesterday as part of my second talk, and also as part of my first talk, I think, that we don't wanna live in a world where five big tech companies control all our data. So in the next slide, of course, as I talked about yesterday, we fight against that, mostly by building an open source and on-prem alternative to some of the products, Microsoft 365 and Google Workspace. But we also try and do a little bit in the legal and the political area. And so, yeah, that's what I will talk about in the next 15-ish minutes. So it doesn't mean I'm a lawyer. I really am not. So what I share is my limited layman understanding of the whole thing. Also not a politician, so same thing is true. I'm sure there are people here who know more about these things, so sorry in advance for that. But I'll do my best. So I'm a co-founder at Nextcloud, and I'm going to talk about the Digital Markets Act, not about direct memory access. So I'm going to start with a little bit of history, and then talk about the complaint that Nextcloud files with the European Union and the German antitrust authorities a couple of years ago. And a little hint, unfortunately, you can forget about a happy ending, even though there are some rules about how quickly they need to respond to such complaints. It's 3 years and, yeah, basically nothing has happened. So, anyway, before giving everything away, let's talk a bit about a tiny bit of history. The old people among us probably remember the first browser war, Microsoft taking on Netscape, and I think most of us know what happens after that. Microsoft gave Internet Explorer away for free. They bundled it into Windows, the most dominant operating system, and Netscape, which was trying to build a business around browsers, had no chance. But I should acknowledge the EU did something in 2013. That's 12 years after the browser war ended. But hey, they did something, $500 million fine. And they also enforced the browser selection screen, which I think probably helped with the second browser war, helping the rise of Firefox and then later Chrome, of course. Yeah, now Chrome owns the web, whether that was a big improvement, we can debate that. But again, the timeline, so the browser war happened from 1995 to 2001, and in 2013, the antitrust authorities was like, maybe this wasn't good, what Microsoft did. A little bit late, no. We'll see more of that later. Of course, another example from the 90s is WordPerfect. I don't know, how many of you have used WordPerfect? Two. Wow. Oh, three. Okay. The rest of you is young and innocent. Lovely. Yeah, WordPerfect was there before Microsoft Word was popular, but Microsoft killed it. They bundled Word into Office. Today, you think Office is Word, text editor and a spreadsheet, etc. That was not the case in the 90s. Microsoft created that concept, probably in part to kill WordPerfect, which they did. They also used a nice trick where they had certain APIs in Windows that they were using for Word, but they had not documented them and did not make them available for WordPerfect. So the first version of WordPerfect for Windows was really, really shitty. And WordPerfect then finally managed to get access to these APIs. But yeah, this caused a huge delay for their development, and they had to almost start over, which was a pretty big factor in them losing out. So, you know, a couple of tricks you can use if you are bothered by a competitor. You know, you can do low pricing for some of your products while you earn money on other products. You can try bundling. This works really well. And of course, you can just make it hard to use your platforms. If you have a gatekeeper role running an operating system like Microsoft, this works really well. Of course, these things only work if you're a monopolist or close to, but very effective. So what's happening today? Well, I mean, there are these companies, and they are currently trying to compete with Microsoft. How is that going? I wouldn't buy stock in them. So then there's the question, of course, about us. Yeah, how are we doing? Well, so obviously Microsoft is up to his old tricks. And we're in the same boat as Slack and Dropbox and many other players. We're competing with Microsoft. Of course, we do it quite different than them. Slack, Dropbox are kind of competing with Microsoft in their own turf. The only differentiator is, I don't even know, because they're all offering a SaaS product. We don't. But yeah, even then, Microsoft is doing its thing. So what are they doing? Well, they're integrating 365 very deep into Windows. They're bundling again, bundling Teams with Windows, bundling OneDrive with Windows. And we can't get access to certain APIs that would allow you to use Microsoft Office on your tablet and then save directly to a Nextcloud. This is not possible because technical reasons. We're not getting access to that API. So it's all very similar to what they did to Internet Explorer, to WordPerfect, etc. And this is working as usual. I mean, if you look in general in like cloud technology in Europe, you have this nice graph of how the market share is going, big tech firms versus the European cloud providers. And yeah, you will see similar things, I think, between Dropbox and Slack and others, right? Teams has taken over completely, and not by being a better product, at least. That's what most people tell me who use it. I don't. In 2021, we decided to say something about it. We assembled a coalition of a bunch of companies, and we filed a complaint about Microsoft's behavior, mostly about OneDrive. I mean, we had to focus on one thing, so we picked that. And yeah, what happened? Well, let's have a look. So we filed a complaint in first quarter of 2021. There were some conversations with the European Commission, and then nothing happened. So late in the year, we decided, let's make some noise, maybe put a little bit of pressure by talking to the press, which we did. And then suddenly they were interested again. We talked for a while. It got quiet again. We also filed a complaint at the time by the German antitrust authorities, but there also not a lot has happened. Then after all of 2022, we again went to the press. Again, there were some conversations, no action. Slack also filed a complaint about bundling of Teams and Windows. And 2 days ago, actually, a formal investigation was started by the European Commission into Microsoft for bundling Teams. I guess they forgot about us. They're very busy trying to do other things. So yeah, I guess we're too small or we don't have enough lobbyists. I mean, zero, of course. So we're still waiting. Now, yeah, if you look at the Microsoft Internet Explorer versus Netscape, that took 12 years, so I don't have very high expectations. So this is about what we did and our complaint. Next, I'm going to talk about the DMA. But first, if anybody has any questions about our antitrust complaint, you can ask now before I continue with the more political stuff. No questions?
One question. Do you feel, you know, there is a trend to open open source program offices within EU countries, mm-hmm. right? Are they helpful in this direction to actually raise awareness of these issues?
That's because a good question.
SUSE is sponsoring one in Germany and one in Czech Republic.
Yeah. So you will probably find a ton of different ideas and opinions about this. My opinion is where an OSPO tries to steer the purchasing policy of a government in a direction that results in more sustainable and more long-term vision-based purchasing, aka we're giving $1 billion every year, Germany, I mean here, to Microsoft, maybe we should look for local vendors who can help our own economy as well. Maybe we shouldn't be dependent on Russian gas, you know, like this level of decision-making, when an OSPO does that, I think that's good. On the other hand, what I'm not looking for, I mean, as a business, but I think in general for open source, I'm not really looking for handouts. I am not opposed to subsidies per se, but the German government is putting $60 million a year in like open source software and $1 billion to Microsoft. Microsoft alone, I'm not talking about other products like VMware gets also $600 million per year. So like that 60 million isn't going to do anything anyway. What they would rather do see is that there's an actual level playing field, that you get an actual opportunity. So instead of seeing tenders that say, hey, we want Microsoft, please give us an offer, how about you do a tender for a collaboration platform that we can actually compete? Yeah, that would be nice, but that's not what most OSPOs do. And when OSPOs tries to build their own product, I think that's even less efficient. That's just wasting money. As a government, you shouldn't be building software. You should let the market do that. And the market does. We're trying to build it, or we have built it. Use it, yeah? And buy it. There are lots of work. There is lots of work to do in that area. Anyway, before this becomes a rant, let's start talking about the DMA now. So what is the DMA? The DMA was passed together with the DSA, so the Digital Markets Act and the Digital Services Act. And as the name might suggest, the Digital Markets Act is about digital markets, trying to regulate competition and inter-business relations, while the DSA is more concerned with business-to-consumer relations. Yeah, so the DMA is really, in a way, business-to-business. So why do you need legislation to curb big tech? I think I'm preaching to the choir. I don't need to explain to you, but they do have a ton of power. Let's put it that way, and that's why I think a law like the DMA is a good idea, and the approach is, interesting, and I think might work. Let's see. So, quickly look at the dates. It became law in 2022, only went into effect last year. So what happened? Well, the DMA works in multiple steps. So what first happens is that the European Commission designates companies as gatekeepers. So the DMA doesn't impact 99.999% of all companies and all activity in the economy. It only concerns a specific group of companies that has been designated as gatekeepers. Now, there's a definition of what is a gatekeeper, and you as a company, when you think you fit that definition, you have an obligation to tell the Commission about it, and then they will say, oh, yes, you're a gatekeeper, or no, you're not. It's a bit of a weird system, but that's how it works. So what is a gatekeeper? Well, think of Booking.com. If you're a hotel and you want people to be able to find your hotel rooms, you almost need to be on Booking.com. So they control access to your potential customers. It's the same, of course, with Amazon. If you want to sell something, physical goods, you almost have to be on Amazon if you want to sell it. Lieferando for restaurants and so on. All, I think, fairly clear. Now, in September 2023, the Commission said, okay, these are the first companies that we have designated as gatekeepers. So Booking.com, as I mentioned, Apple, think of the App Store, Microsoft, ByteDance for TikTok, Amazon, and others. Now, what do gatekeepers have to do? Unlike other companies, the gatekeepers have a number of specific obligations and prohibitions, so things they must do and things they can't do. And that only applies then to gatekeepers and not to everybody else in the economy, which, unlike, for example, the GDPR, means that a normal business doesn't have any worries about this, right? This doesn't bother you, but it is something relevant for Facebook, which is fine because they have the money to deal with it anyway. So these rules are things like you must allow interoperability. So that is why Messenger and WhatsApp are now working on federation features and APIs so other messengers can actually talk to WhatsApp and Messenger, which I think is awesome. So that is the law already working, I think, in a good way. Apple has to allow competing app stores. God, 1 minute. And let you uninstall apps. We'll get to that in a minute. Google and Microsoft, they cannot prefer their own services on, for example, Bing or Google, etc. So how is it going? Well, we learned a new word. At least I did. I had never heard of this in the last months. New word, malicious compliance. So our favorite colorful company has taught us all that it is possible to be compliant and at the same time basically stick a huge middle finger in the direction of the European Commission. I think most of you know they basically allowed other app stores, as they have to, but they did it in a way that it's basically useless. They did a bunch of things like you need to prove that you're a serious company, like that. So small companies can forget about it. You need to pay an ungodly amount of money, even though you're not using the services. basically just a huge middle finger to, you know, Europe and EU regulations. And they're not done yet. They just continue their middle finger. And last week, they introduced a new release with a ton of features, and they just said that they're not bringing these features to Europe because they're worried about the DMA, which, I mean, if you look at the features, it's just complete nonsense. AI features, maybe. But like the ability to see an app on your phone, on your laptop, I can't really see how the DMA is an issue there. But again, this is just them giving a message. 1 minute. I have one more middle finger for all of you. If you think it's Apple only doing this, we have, of course, a friend at Microsoft, which now automatically backs up all your data to OneDrive, whether you ever thought about it or not, without permission. So these companies are all doing this kind of stuff. It's the end of my presentation. I just wanted to share one more thought, which is maybe something that you are wondering too after listening to this and watching it. And that's more of a question. I mean, who's the boss here? You know, I think it's really insane. I mean, look, as EU citizens, we have a admittedly flawed democratic process that should decide how our market works, what the rules are in our union. But apparently the foreign tech firms have so much power that they can control by politicians and move the process and stick up middle fingers in a way that is really quite insane. I think they just have our politicians by the balls, if you ask me. So, you had a question. Yeah, the screen mirroring.
This is like feature of Apple TV for, I don't know, like 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. Like, how come they will not enroll it on the new release? What the hell, you know?
Yeah, it's a thing where you can interact indeed with the app on your phone. So your phone is off, it's just lying down, and then you can use it on your laptop. You know, the app's on your phone. It's a cool feature. It's nice. And it's not coming to Europe because, you know, fuck you. Yeah. Anyway, any more questions or comments? I think if not, then it's time for barbecue. Well, first the group photo. Thank you.